This is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back, welcome back. I'm Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant. We're continuing our Back to Basics series. We're getting toward the end, and so we figured that we would look at macromolecules, and that's protein, carbohydrates, essential amino acids, essential fatty acids, and then we'd be coming to a close. And so today we decided to focus on amino acids. Carol and I started working on the script, and when we realized, who better to explain amino acids than our very own Dr. David Minkoff? And there was no way and or nothing we could say that would enhance what he already shared with us prior interviews. So what we did was we took an interview that he had done with us, and we have inserted it here in this interview time. So you're going to hear the best of the best. You're going to hear Dr. David Minkoff, and then I will come in at the end and explain some of what was said. Not much needs explaining, but enhance it a little bit at the end so we can all be absolute experts on amino acids. And this, I must admit, is really fun. I promise you, we all think we understand proteins. There's a lot to learn here with Dr. David Minkoff. Listen, learn, and enjoy. And I'll be right back.
We're here today for another remarkable, innovative show that's going to teach you more about your health than you realized you needed to know. And I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
Ah, yes, Carol Peterson. Welcome, my favorite co-host. And we are here with Dr. David Minkoff. And Dr. Minkoff has been on before. He gave us a very important talk once before, and guess what? It got attention, I must tell you. And today we intend to do the same. Dr. Minkoff, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be back on with you guys.
I know. We'll keep you going. We'll get it going really fast. Carol, could you introduce Dr. Minkoff to the audience and some of the people that maybe didn't hear our previous show?
Yeah, so Dr. David Minkoff actually is an alma mater of the University of Wisconsin, which is also my alma mater. He grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, and attended medical school there. He is board certified in pediatrics. He has done a fellowship in infectious disease. But along his path, and it's often happens, he relates a story about struggling with his wife's illness and what happened to her. So now he's in biological medicine, heavy metal detoxification, anti-aging medicine, hormone replacement, functional medicine, energy medicine, neurotherapy, prolotherapy, homeopathy, optimum nutrition. This really runs the gamut. You would think that, I wonder if we could find a word that would encompass all that wonderful broadness. I don't know.
I guess the word is Dr. David Minkoff.
So I have known Dr. Minkoff and his wife for a great many years. So welcome, Dr. Minkoff. We're so happy to have you here today.
Thank you very much. And it's interesting because one of the real sort of impetuses in my career was sitting down with probably your mentor and one of mine, Wally, at Women's International in Madison. We were there for a visit in the middle 90s, and we had no idea about hormone replacement or safe uses of cortisol or thyroid. And we called him up on a lark, and he invited us over on a Saturday afternoon, and we spent a couple hours with him, and he opened up my eyes to the whole area of hormone replacement in just a miraculous way. So I know you've worked with him for many, many years. He's an amazing man. I just thought I'd throw that in because we never talked about that.
Well, no, and I'll certainly pass that on to Wally. He'll be thrilled to hear that, and of course, extend greetings to you and Sue.
So many of the lectures that I hear by Dr. Minkoff focus on chronic diseases. He deals, or a large portion of his practice, are diseases that most people can't get a hold of, and these people live half or one quarter lives because their energy isn't functioning, they're in pain, they're not so sick, some of them, that they're in bed, but they're not well enough to function on a daily basis. And I wanted to ask Dr. Minkoff, how did you get involved in treating this very specific patient population, almost like the patient population, the discard, the ones that all have been given their labels of whatever, rheumatoid arthritis, and given drugs, or Lyme disease, and given drugs, and still are not functioning? How did you get involved with this patient population, Dr. Minkoff?
You know, I think that mostly it's because I like helping people, and I like challenges. We just sort of, when I got into this, my wife was supposedly healthy, and then got what was called MS, and it just didn't make any sense to me. It turns out she was mercury toxic, and that was the problem with her. But because I sort of solved that problem with her, a lot of our friends noticed that, gee whiz, I have chronic headaches, or I have rheumatoid arthritis, or I've got irritable bowel syndrome, or I've got cancer, or things like that, or an autoimmune disease. Can you apply what you learned about her to me? Because the doctors that I'm seeing have a very limited view of what causes what I've got, and all of what they're giving me are things to try to make me feel better, but none of them are really directed toward why did I get this in the first place and how can I actually really get better so I don't become sort of medically disabled just because the medications that I'm taking are giving me more side effects than almost the disease symptoms. So it sort of directed me in that way. And then I like the challenge of the puzzle of this type of patient. Like, what is really wrong with you, and can we together figure it out so that you could get your life restored and be out of pain and get your energy back? And there's so many of these patients now. It's just like everywhere, because everybody's really suffering from virtually the same things. And this is so interesting because yesterday I had a local veterinarian come see me because she heard me on the Lyme Summit, and she said, I just had to come talk to you because what I'm seeing in animals is the same thing that you're seeing in patients.
Wow.
She said, when I started practice 30 years ago, I would see an animal with cancer maybe once a month. She said, I'm now seeing 4 to 5 a week.
Really?
And same thing with hypersensitivity. They get rashes and they get problems. And these are things that people, this was very interesting for me to hear, because this is what these epidemics are, what we're seeing in medicine. Epidemics of Lyme disease and ADD and hypersensitivity and asthma and autoimmune disease and cancer and chronic fatigue and Lyme disease. These are all just skyrocketing out of control. And these are things we never saw 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. We didn't see them. And from talking with her, she said, hey, look, we're seeing the same things in the animals. Because these animals live with people. They're subjected to the same things that the people are subjected to in terms of radiation and chemicals and pesticides and processed foods and vaccinations. They're all sick too. So we're either killing ourselves or we're being killed by the influences that are in our environment slowly and with chronic illness. And this is a really big problem now for really globally. This isn't just the U.S. and Canada. This is in Europe. We have patients coming from Sweden and from England and from Ireland and from the Middle East because they're seeing the same things there. It's a tragedy, and it's something that is very interesting to work with, but really I think crucial if we're gonna bail people out. She's the epidemiologist at Harvard who worked out the glyphosate data, the Roundup.
Sema, right? Dr. Sema?
Yes.
What's her first name?
And this is just regards to autism.
Right.
But, you know, I was a pediatrician for 15 years. And I maybe told the story last time, but I keep telling it because it's so poignant to what's going on. Is I remember making rounds with chairman of the department. His name was Bill Nyhan, and Bill Nyhan was one of the foremost pediatricians and researchers in the world at the time. And once a week, he would come and make rounds with us and see the patients that were on the floor in the ward at Children's Hospital. And I remember specifically one day him going around, and there was a little, probably 15 or 18 month old that was in the crib, and he told us about the kid, and he said, when you are done with rounds today, I want each of you to come by and examine this child because you'll probably never see another one in your career. He said, this child has autism. Mm. This was 1978. He told me that the incidence of autism at that point was like one in over 100,000 live birth children. It was very rare. And he said, in the course of your career, you will never see, you know, as a busy pediatrician, the chances of you seeing 100,000 children are, you know, you'll never see that many kids. Mm-hmm. And chances are you'll never see another one. But if you do, at least you'll have seen one and you'll recognize it. The incidence of autism now is one in 50 or 60, somewhere in there.
Yes.
And Stephanie Senoff says, this is a Harvard, you know, this is not any small potato scientist. She's a very eminent scientist. She said at the current rate, where 3/4 of all the rainwater in the United States is positive for Roundup or glyphosate,
mm-hmm.
that at the current rate, by 2025, one in five children is going to have autism. Mm-hmm. You know, autism children are very difficult. There are huge burdens on school systems and families. Who's going to work? Who's going to be left to work if one in five children need the kind of
full-time care
and medical treatment? Because we see autistic kids here too. It's very complicated. It takes lots of money. The usual resources and insurance companies, they don't pay for any of this stuff that's going to ever make these children better.
And that's it.
Get their plan, psych medication. And that certainly does only one thing, and it makes them worse. So this is really kind of where we're at as a society right now.
And those parents taking care of those children aren't going to be very well either. They're going to be the Lyme disease, chronic fatiguers, chronic pain, autoimmune diseases. Who's going to take care of the parents of the children?
You know, that's right. And so, you know, I grew up in the 60s, and one of my favorite authors was Jean-Paul Sartre, and he was an existentialist. And he wrote a book called No Exit. Like, there's nowhere to go. And we are in a situation that there's nowhere to go. The polar bears have hypothyroidism and plastics in their thyroid, and they've got high levels. This is even in Antarctica. They have high levels of the same chemicals and garbage that we have. So there's no going anywhere. And we have to do two things. We have to be able to impinge on lawmakers and opinion leaders to get these companies that are producing these products to lay off of it. We have to get people to go organic and make selections so that they're eating good food. And we have to get doctors educated so that they see that this is a problem. The problem with people isn't a shortage of Prozac or Ampicillin. It's really, it's a shortage of health, of food, of supplements, of healthy lifestyle. And that's the only way we're going to turn it around. Otherwise, we're going to just make ourselves extinct.
Now, one piece of the work that you're doing is you're working a lot with proteins, amino acid proteins. And
yes.
You explained to us at another time on another program about these proteins. And could you explain to us about the proteins that you're working with and why are you working with proteins? Isn't there an abundance of protein? Isn't there an abundance of amino acids in our food supply?
Well, there are certainly sources of protein, and here's where this idea came from. And this was another physician who was working with children in Africa and trying to optimize their nutritional sources. And what they were using at the time was milk and rice to try to take children with kwashiorkor and what's called marasmus. These are severely protein, really starved children, and to try to do nutritional reconstitution with them. The World Health Organization's sort of go-to formula was a milk-based formula with rice for calories. The question that was asked is, could you improve upon that? Could you provide a source of protein, but really amino acids? And for those that aren't kind of familiar with the terminology, that proteins are made of smaller units called amino acids. Now, if you think of it, if we were going to think of language, the alphabet in English has 26 letters and 8 vowels, and if you take those letters and vowels, you can make up different combinations of words. Now, some words are very short, like one letter, like A or A. Or I. And some words are very long. I think I learned in school that the longest word in the English language, do you guys know what it is?
Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Well,
that's funny.
When I was in junior high, that was the longest word. Now, that's been a few years, so maybe someone...
Maybe there's another longer one now.
Anyway, so for there's enough trivia on the show. So anyway, so some words are really long. And the way proteins work is similar. The alphabet for proteins are called amino acids. These are molecules which have carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, and occasionally sulfur. There's 22 of them that are in nature that our body takes and makes into proteins which are longer. So if we take like a protein like glutathione, it's got 3 amino acids. And if they're put together in a certain way, it will be glutathione. Growth hormone, I think, has 89 amino acids. So when those amino acids, those 22 different amino acids are put together in a certain blend, you get growth hormone. And another blend would be thyroid hormone. And another blend would, say, be collagen or skeletal muscle. Now, skeletal muscle, I think, has 455 amino acids put together, so it's very long and it's very complicated. Now, the way it works in nature is that if you eat let's say you eat some animal protein, you have a piece of fish or a piece of meat, and in order for our body can't take that whole long muscle fiber of 455 amino acids as muscle fiber and absorb it. So we put it in our mouth and we chew it up and it goes to our stomach, and in our stomach there's an enzyme called pepsin, and the pepsin with hydrochloric acid gets activated and it starts breaking up this 455 amino acid chain into smaller pieces, and then it goes to our small intestine and our pancreas puts into our small intestine when we eat a couple of other enzymes, trypsin, chymotrypsin, and these things chop up the proteins even more until what we're left with is individual amino acids, which then can be absorbed into our body. If they're not broken down all the way, if you don't have hydrochloric acid, or you don't have enough pepsin in your stomach, or you don't have enough chymotrypsin, and we test people for these things, and we find the vast majority of people, over probably about 35 or 40, they don't have this stuff anymore. They don't have it. They don't have enough. So digestion fails. Once these amino acids are digested and they go into the bloodstream, they go into individual cells and the process is reversed. The cells will take each one of these amino acids, start linking them together. So if it's a hair cell, it will link these things together and make hair, which is a protein. Or if it's a liver cell, it will link these amino acids together to make an enzyme so that something can be detoxified. Or the thyroid will make the thing, put it together, so that you get thyroid hormone. And so that's how the body works. Now, one of the things that I found in working with chronically ill people is that not only did many of them not have enough of the things in their digestive tract to break down the proteins, but also their gut was very inflamed. They had parasites or funguses, or the membrane itself was not intact, and they couldn't absorb these things very well either.
So you're starving when you're eating. You could be eating protein in your diet, but you absolutely can't absorb it or break it down so your body can use it.
That's right, and you don't get it. So if we then measure and we say, okay, Mary, a patient, I want to know, do you have enough amino acids in your blood so that your body can make the proteins that your body needs to sustain itself? And the body has over 50,000 different proteins that it's got to make. It's very complicated. And many of these proteins get damaged on a daily basis by oxidative stress, chemicals, or by physical stress. The guy does a whole bunch of pull-ups and then his muscles are sore, or he runs a lot and his heart has to replace muscle fibers and his tendons and his bones. And in all tissues, there's sort of a turnover, like the inside of your gut. Every 3 to 5 days, you're supposed to get a new layer.
Uh-huh.
In your liver, you know, in your bones, these things have a turnover rate. And if you're lacking really amino acids, you can't keep up with the turnover rate, and then your body starts to break down. And one of the areas that is the most important is that in order to make energy at all, inside your cell, inside this little area of the cell called a mitochondria, there are a series of enzymes which are required to be used to take sugar or fat and oxygen and make energy. And these things are all made out of protein. And if you're protein deficient, or really amino acid deficient, and you can't make those enzymes, you're not going to be able to make energy. Now, if your liver can't make energy, you're not going to detoxify. You're not going to make proteins. If your brain can't make neurotransmitters, you know, serotonin and dopamine and epinephrine and things like that, you're not going to be able to think straight, or you're going to be anxious, or you're going to be depressed, or you're not going to be able to...
Sleep deprived. Huge. Yeah. Sleep deprivation.
So these are the critical things, nutrients, that are needed. And that when you put these in a way that sort of can bypass the gut and digestion. And the other part of this is if you can put them in a way that is in the right proportion, because of these 22 amino acids, there's 8 of them that make up more than half of every protein known. These are called essential amino acids. These are, out of these 8, you can make the other 14. And these essential amino acids are critical. And if you just ate essential amino acids, you wouldn't have to eat the rest because the body can make them. There was a discovery some years ago that if you put these 8 amino acids in a certain specific ratio, in a certain percentage, that when they went into the body would just soak them up like mad and could make any protein it wanted very quickly, and there'd be no even leftover waste. It would be just very efficient. And when they were looking for these starving children in Africa, what was the formula that it should be? It turns out this would be the formula, because over 99% of this particular blend of amino acids called perfect amino, that's why it's perfect amino. It's perfect because it's the exact perfect ratio of these eight essential amino acids. And if you take that in, you can start to restore your own body so that it can now make things that it wasn't making. It can, you can turn over your tissue the way you were supposed to. You can make enzymes so that you can detoxify, and you can make energy, and you can restore your physiology. And when you do that, you get big boosts in health, metabolism, nutrition, energy, and it makes people better.
Now, when people are protein deficient, well, actually, I have two questions. When people are protein deficient, they can't digest protein because the ability to digest is based on protein molecules and enzymes in the stomach, in the intestines, that allows you to digest. So I want to focus back. This is a protein formula. There are many protein formulas. There's whey protein, there's soy protein formulas, there's rice protein formulas, there's fish, there's chicken, there's turkey, there's
eggs
and hemp. So I'd like to talk about the different qualities of protein and the ability to digest them and why this is so important. And at the end of this, I want to talk about the different types of protein and their absorbability and how they can help us.
Sure. And what you're talking about is a sort of catch-22 that a person gets in. They can't digest it. They can't get it in. Then they can't make what they need. And then if they don't have those things, then they can't detoxify, and then they can't make enzymes, and then they can't digest it. And so you get in this sort of dwindling spiral, which is what happens when people are... It's what happens with aging. We know that the average person between age 20 and 60 is going to lose 25 to 30% of their lean body mass. They're going to lose it. And it's not that a 60-year-old can't make protein, because if you give them the amino acids IV, they make protein fine. But the breakdown in either what they're putting in or in their body's ability to digest it and absorb it goes down, and that's why old people have shriveled up muscles and they shrink, and younger people look good or used to. Now, here's what happens, and I did a talk on this to the American College of Nutrition. Now, these are all PhD-level dietitians, nutritionists, medical doctors who are experts in nutrition. And I told them about this, the following work, which isn't mine, but I pass it along here, and it's the basis for this product, Perfect Amino, which is what we're talking about. And that's this. You can, the difference between a protein and a carbohydrate and a fat, those are the three so-called macronutrients, okay? So you have proteins, and you have fats, and you have carbohydrates, and you have vitamins and minerals and water, and that's the whole thing. That's everything that we're made out of. The difference between proteins and fats and carbohydrates is that proteins have nitrogen, and fats and carbohydrates don't. All the rest of those are made out of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen in different proportions, but proteins have nitrogen. Now, amino acid is what those 22 amino acids that I was talking about is what makes up proteins. And amino in Greek means nitrogen. So these are substances that have nitrogen. So if you want to test a protein and you say, gee whiz, how good is this protein? What's the biological value? Like, how good is this that if I eat this particular protein, can my body then take that protein, disassemble it into individual amino acids, absorb it, reassemble it into my body protein. So can I take cow liver or cow muscle or goat muscle and make it into human muscle or hair or enzymes? And you can do a study to find out how. And that is, and let's just take whey, because whey is a very popular protein. Whey is a byproduct of the cheese-making industry, and it for a long time was thrown away because people didn't know what to do with it, and then somebody got the brilliant idea that this stuff that we're throwing away, maybe we could make something out of it that would be good. And that's what whey protein is. It's a protein that comes from manufacturing cheese. And whey protein is, so you could say to someone, okay, we're going to feed you fruits and vegetables, which have negligible amounts of usable protein, and we're going to just feed you whey protein, let's say, for 3 days. And during that 3 days, if we feed you 100 grams of whey protein per day, which would be plenty for just about anybody, supposedly, and we measure, and in 100 grams of whey protein, if you broke that down, it would end up being 16 grams of nitrogen.
16?
It's about 16% ratio.
Okay.
So we could say, okay, today you took in 100 grams of whey, and that equates to 16 grams of nitrogen. So on the formula, nitrogen in is 16. Now, we collect urine all day long. You don't throw any of your urine away. You collect it in a big jug. And we do this for the 3 days. And we say how much nitrogen per day came out. And what we want to know is how much nitrogen got retained. How much did stay in? Because if it stayed in, it meant your body took that amino acid. It did not break it down so that the nitrogen came off. It used it. It assembled it. And it made it into a protein somewhere.
Uh-huh.
If it didn't make it into a protein, the body takes the nitrogen off. And then now what you're left with is really a carbohydrate. It's a carbon, hydrogen, oxygen chain. And it can store it as fat. It can store it as glycogen. It can burn it. And the nitrogen is waste. That's why we urinate. Our whole urinary system is designed to rid the body of excess nitrogen, among other things. But nitrogen is the main thing. Urea is what urine is made out of, is nitrogen. So if we do that balance study with whey, what we'll find out is that only about 16% of the nitrogen that went in stayed in. 84% got peed out.
That's from whey,
or any dairy. It doesn't matter if it's cheese or yogurt or whatever, any form of dairy protein that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
The retention is about 16%. Now, that isn't a very high value for what you take in, because it means you're getting a fair number of calories that aren't, as a supposed high protein food, like whey protein is supposed to be like this great protein food. And what what's promoted about it is that it's absorbed very well. Well, it is absorbed very well. 100% absorption. Well, yes, it is. It goes in. But what's the cell doing with it? And if the cell's not making protein out of it, then it's taking the nitrogen off and it's using it as fuel.
Now,
here's an analogy. Let's say I'm in the car manufacturing business, and you ship me things that I need to make cars. And I've got a great big factory, and I tell you that the simplest car that I can make has four wheels, so I need you to send me, for every car, four wheels, and it has a chassis, like a body, so that I can put the wheels on there, and it needs a motor, and it needs a steering wheel. To be the simplest car. And you say, fine, I'm going to send you 100 wheels. Good. I'm going to send you 25 chassis. I'm going to send you 25 motors. And I'm going to send you one steering wheel. How many cars are you going to make?
One cup.
And what are you going to do with all the rest of it?
It's waste.
It's waste.
So you get another steering wheel.
So you got a lot full of stuff, and in the body, you can't take the lot full of stuff. There's no storage pool for nitrogen in the body. There's no storage pool for protein except the body structure itself. So what happens is the body, and to the body, nitrogen is toxic. You get someone who can't pee, you know, their kidneys are damaged or their liver is damaged, can't make nitrogen, they get really sick because they can't process the nitrogen. They get uremia, they get a disease, and it's terrible. So if you want to optimize, you sent me 100 wheels, 25 chassis, 25 steering wheels, and 25 steering wheels, I could make 25 cars and I have virtually nothing left.
Uh-huh.
Now, this amino acid formula, this perfect amino, is that ratio for the body to make protein. It's the perfect exact blend so that 99% of the nitrogen stays in and doesn't go out. And you can give this to patients that have kidney disease. They're on dialysis.
Then are on a low-protein diet?
Well, they're on a low-protein diet. And if you take care of patients that have chronic kidney disease, they're on a very low protein diet, or even people with very, very severe, you know, like end-stage liver failure. You can't give them hardly any protein because they'll get nitrogen toxic. You know, you can get perfect amino in these patients and they don't get nitrogen toxic, and you can give them plenty of protein so that their bodies don't break down. The problem with chronic renal failure patients, they're on low protein diets, and if you watch them, their immune system breaks down, their skin breaks down, their serum proteins break down because you can't put enough in them to keep up with the body needs. And you know what? If you gave them perfect amino, you give them 10 grams three times a day, you'd meet their whole protein requirement.
And
you
they
wouldn't increase their BUN or their you wouldn't increase their free nitrogen, and they wouldn't be sick from their disease from malnutrition. Actually be able to keep them healthier, way healthier.
Well, that brings me to two things that I see regularly in my practice. And one is people understand the risk of a toxic environment. They really get it. And so they come into me and they're on a detox diet. And what is the detox diet? Almost all vegetables or all fruits and fruit juices or vegetable and fruit juices. And what I'm seeing is almost no amino acids, no proteins, or limited amino acids. And yet you just very clearly stated that the ability to detox is based on enzymes. The enzymes are created from amino acids. Could you explain that to us? Could you really clarify to the audience how the body detoxes and why it needs amino acids to be able to detox?
Sure. And what you're saying is really true. And I have found this, that with people who are on low-protein diets, vegans, vegetarians, within a couple years, virtually all of them, this isn't all, but it's virtually all, are protein malnourished. If I measure their serum amino acids, they're low. And often often they're wasting muscle. They don't have the normal amount of muscle. Their hair doesn't grow as well. They are committed to doing this to improve their health, and I think that is very laudable. But I just find very, very few of them will their body actually be able to tolerate and do it because they don't have the things coming in. Our ancestors weren't vegetarians. There's no long-term vegetarian or vegan populations on planet Earth. There aren't any. Our ancestors weren't that way. Our DNA was based, to a large part, on animal protein. And so you can go without it. You take perfect amino if you're committed for religious reasons or spiritual reasons, where you don't want to hurt or injure animals. I can understand that. But you better be taking 30 grams a day of perfect amino, or your health is likely to suffer. So what happens with detoxification? There's a sort of a two-step system within the liver where enzymes kind of do a breakdown and then put a tag on these toxins So they're kind of labeled to get out, and this is totally based on amino acids. And then once it gets into the gut, it has to be further moved out, and this also is true, that you need amino acids. And so if you're trying to detox, if you're going to do one of these cleanses, the Master Miracle Cleanse or, you know, one of these things, if you take Perfect Amino while you do it, what you'll find is all the so-called detox reactions that people get, mostly it's because they're releasing toxic stored substances that are in their fat, in their bones. It's getting mobilized by the diet that they're eating. It's going into their system. It's overwhelming their liver. They're not putting enough amino acids in to actually handle the detox process. And this stuff circulates around, and they get headaches, and they feel exhausted, and they feel terrible, and they get pain. And you know what? If you do Perfect Amino while you do your next detox, it will go way smoother, way better, it's way safer, and it'll be way more efficient. Detox better without suffering the consequences.
So my goodness, wasn't that an interview? I promised you a good one, and you got a good one in spades. So let's go over some of what we heard. I'm Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant. We've been listening to Dr. David Minkoff, pediatrician, immunologist, environmental health expert, anti-aging certified, and it goes on and on. I would like to begin the ending by defining some words. I think you understood it, but let's define them so we're really clear. First of all, there's proteins. They're molecules in the body that are composed of much smaller molecules called amino acids. Proteins make up about 50% of each of the cells in your muscles, organs, tendons, nerves, bones, skin, and most chemicals in your body. Proteins give our cells structure, the structure that we see and we're familiar with. Proteins are unable to be stored. Therefore, we need a constant intake of available proteins to maintain our healthy body structure. Now, we did say that proteins are molecules in the body which are made up of much smaller molecules called amino acids. But there's a very important term to remember. It's called essential amino acids. All of the essential amino acids can be used to make up any of the non-essential amino acids. And there are thousands of non-essential amino acids. And they're made up by these eight essential amino acids. The essential amino acids cannot be made up by the body. So that's our beginning. 50% of our body is made up of proteins and amino acids, and our body cannot make eight of these essential amino acids. Therefore, they're needed to be ingested daily so the body can make the cells that are regenerating on a daily basis. Without the essential amino acids, our body cannot replicate healthy cells. It's interesting because we think of hormones, we think of enzymes, and we think of multiple functions within our body, but very few of us understand how these functions and how these molecules are put together with amino acids. Without amino acids, our body can't make hormones. Without amino acids, our body cannot make immune cells. Without amino acids, our body can't make digestive enzymes. So here we are in a circle that many of us, and I see many of my patients in, and that circle is that they're not digesting and they need proteins. So when you give them proteins, what happens is they can't digest them. So they're literally starving while they're eating food, as Carol explained earlier in the talk, that you have a group of people that are literally starving while they eat because they can't digest. And what aggravates the situation, many drugs do, but particularly the antacids, the proton pump inhibitors, what makes the ability to digest proteins? Hydrochloric acid. What makes hydrochloric acid? Proteins, very specific proteins, minerals, and B vitamins. Now, when we block our body's ability to make these very specific enzymes and hydrochloric acid, we could eat continuously and never take in what we need. I always find it so interesting, and I brought this up in the lecture, but I'm going to repeat it. I always find it so interesting when people attempt to detox. The first thing they do is they limit their amino acids, thinking that that's heavy food, so therefore they want to limit that so they can begin to detox. What they do not understand, and what has not been explained to them, that their ability to detox is based on amino acids and proteins. And without amino acids and proteins, their liver is not going to function well enough to remove the toxins from the body. Their bowels are not going to be able to bind the toxins, which makes them move out of the body. So you've got a whole circle there that there is an attempt to be healthier, but within that attempt and within that limited understanding, what ends up happening is we're blocking our body's ability to respond. I very often see a very simplistic relationship to health, that this is good and this is bad. But in actuality, it doesn't work out quite so black and white. We have many, many tones of gray that need to be incorporated. So it's not so much that this is good and this is bad. It's amounts. Too much is bad. Too little is bad. But yet, the right amount, it can be very appropriate and very health-giving. Yet it becomes very difficult to say, this is right and this is wrong, because every body has different needs. Their hormone levels are unique to them. Some people have higher hormone levels than others. Some people have different metabolisms, different immune functions. And with all of that, we have to take into account how to supply the needs for each function. I must say, it would be so much easier if one size fit all and we could have one prescription, which is very often what they attempt to do in allopathic doctors. They have this drug or that drug, and if you fit into that prescription, it can be very effective. But if you don't, there are very limited options other than working through yourself, through your body, finding your body's direct needs and then supplying them. So let's go back to digestion, because that's a key point here. Our food is chewed and then it goes down into the stomach where it meets a fluid, which is a mix of hydrochloric acid and pepsin. The hydrochloric acid cleanses, kills bacteria, virus, fungus. It's cleaning the food that came in from the outside, attempting to go into the body. And it also starts breaking up the bonds, because amino acids, the proteins, are long, long chains. And we can't digest them as long chains. They have to be shorter. But the pepsin then goes in and starts breaking up those chains into small parts and pieces, getting them ready for digestion. That's why people, very often, they take the pill pepsin. They also eat papaya. And papaya has pepsin in it. So papaya, very often in Central America, is given at the end of a meal. It's chopped up and given at the end of the meal to help with digestion. So the proteins, the minerals, the food is in the stomach with quite a bit of liquid, and that liquid is very acidic. If it is not acidic enough, the food literally can rot in the stomach and create bubbles. And as it's rotting and bubbling, it's being pushed up into the esophagus. And so that's where we get heartburn, when there's not enough stomach acid to break down the food, which then triggers the duodenum to release the food into the small intestine, where it continues to be broken down and in preparation for digestion. The end result, this process separates the amino acid chains until they're just free-floating individual amino acids. No more chains. And they're now ready to be absorbed. If they're left in small chains, one of two things happens. One, the amino acids are released through the bowel. But number two is that they're absorbed into the system and get into the bloodstream. And when that happens, they become foreign particles in the bloodstream and create inflammation. Essential nutrients then become inflammatory because they were incorrectly digested. That's pretty interesting. Remember, we said not good or bad. It's just how they're handled that allows them to assist our health. When these proteins are fully broken down, they're able to be utilized in such a way that allows them to become building blocks of new proteins and become the basis of the turnover of the cells that are happening throughout day and night. There's so much more to be explained about digestion and how it works in the body and the different layers of the intestines. The first layer is literally one cell thick, and the second layer consists of immune cells. So that's why we always say 80% of our immune system is through our gut, through our intestines. And very often, if we're not digesting well, that 80% can be attacking the amino acids that were not fully broken down and digest to be ready to be digested by our bodies. So, is this an interesting story? It knocks me over. I love it because I see so much of it in my office. I see so much digestive weakness. The number one selling over-the-counter medicine are for digestive problems and they're acid blockers. And what happens there? With an acid blocker, you're just blocking this whole process and you're overstimulating your immune system because your proteins are not being broken down. They're not able to be utilized. So now follow this thread. Incorrect digestion, incomplete protein digestion, incomplete mineral digestion. Well, what do you have? You have your immune cells attacking what you ate, and you have inflammation in your body, and chronic constant inflammation is defined as autoimmune disease. So please, folks, understand we're all unique. We all have unique needs. But one of those basic needs that we all carry is the need and or the ability to appropriately and correctly digest our foods. It begins in the mouth. We start chewing. It moves down the esophagus into the stomach where it's met by hydrochloric acid and pepsin. If those are absent or missing, we will not have a complete digestion. And with that, an incomplete digestion, we cannot maintain health. So we'll be back next week. Please don't underestimate any piece of this symphony of nutrients, of macronutrients, of micronutrients. Every single one of them are essential for your health. And amino acids are 50% of your body. They're your physical structure. They're your bones, and they're your ability to make bones. They're your hormones. They're your neurotransmitters, so the ability to be happy, the ability to be sad, the ability to feel that sense of awe is all based on your amino acids. So don't underestimate amino acids and figure how to, one, make sure you're getting adequate amounts on a daily basis because amino acids are not stored. But number two, and equally as important, is make sure you're digesting. And if there's bloating, if there's gas, if there's burping, you're not digesting. And the answer isn't going to the pharmacy and getting Mylanta or Tums. The answer is working with your digestion. It might be more hydrochloric acid is what your body needs to be able to digest and maintain health. So work with someone and find your personal ticket to health. So thank you so much for listening to us. And we'll be back next week. It's such a pleasure. Bye-bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com. And my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. And we'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.